Good evening, everybody. You're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back with you here tonight on Wednesday. We've got a lot to talk about, lots to discuss tonight. Of course, our featured story, something I've been wanting to talk about all week. It actually happened over the weekend, but obviously other things have come up. You know, yesterday we talked about the epic anti-Semitism executive order, which was signed today. What did we talk about Monday? I don't even remember. Days go by so quickly, right? But tonight we're going to be talking about the Afghanistan papers, which, I don't know, whenever I talk about Afghanistan, nobody watches the show. I don't know if you guys just don't care, or just don't care about what's happening in the Middle East, but it's very important. There were a ton of papers. I think it was something like 2,000. Let me check. It's actually more. I think it's something like, oh no, it's 2,000 pages of documents that were revealed this weekend about the Afghanistan war and what our government officials knew about it behind the scenes. Turns out they were kind of lying about everything. Lying about the corruption, lying about the money that's been spent, lying about how the war has been going. So we'll go over that. I don't know how much anybody even knows about this because, at least in my opinion, my perception of it, is that this announcement basically came and went over the weekend and nobody even really talked about it. Kind of a big deal. So we'll dive into that. That'll be our featured story. It's pretty horrible stuff. We've got some documents up here. I think like 8 documents or so in particular, some examples going over the waste, the corruption, the fraud, the insanity of this war. That'll be our main story. And then we'll also be talking about the shooting in New Jersey, which we finally found out who was responsible for this. You might have seen this. I think this was, what, on Monday? It was, it was on Tuesday. It was yesterday. And the reason I didn't talk about it earlier this week is because we didn't even know who was responsible for the shooting, I don't believe, until today. You know, I've been following the story for the past couple of days and waiting to find out who the assailants were. If you didn't catch it, there was a big shooting and subsequent shootout in New Jersey, particularly at a kosher deli. They think it was targeted because it was a Jewish deli. And so this was huge news. It was a big deal for the past 48 hours or so. And the reason I didn't cover this is because, like I said, we didn't know who the suspects were. But we found out who the suspects were, and it begins to make sense why they didn't name them right away. You know, I think they call this the Coulter Principle or the Coulter Rule, named, of course, after Ann Coulter, which says that the longer it takes for the government or the police to release the name of a mass shooter or a killer or somebody like that, the higher the probability it is that they're not white, right? And we know this because whenever there's a mass shooting by a white person, well, you find out basically as it happens, right? When it's a white person, you find out within minutes of the person being apprehended, sometimes even before they're apprehended. Their name, their address, you know, what they're about, their motivation, everything, the manifesto. But when it's a black shooter, or it's a Muslim, or it's somebody like that, well, it's sometimes days before they can ascertain, you know, before they feel the public is ready, right, before they have verified who is responsible. And lo and behold, the rule has been upheld. In this particular case, we found out it was 2 black people who were associated with the black Hebrew Israelites, which you may or may not be familiar with. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a moment and what exactly went down, what the motivation was, and so on. But that'll be our show tonight. It's going to be some exciting stuff. You know, not like a ton of news. I got to tell you, I don't know if it's just like the holiday season, but it feels like things are just kind of slow. Don't you feel that way? I mean, the show's high energy. The show's fun and funny and exciting. But sometimes the news, it just grinds to a halt. You know, last year, the good thing was right around, what, like Christmas, it was the government shutdown. I think it was December 21st or December 18th, 2018 was the beginning of the government shutdown. We had stuff to talk about for weeks. And now it just feels like, what are we really even doing, right? So those will be our big stories tonight. Afghanistan papers, big deal. But, you know, for some reason, whenever I title the videos something about like North Korea or Afghanistan, people are like, oh, I don't care about that. They like to hear about Israel and like to hear about immigration. But there's nothing going on with that this week. Before we dive into the news, I do just want to address, I know I talked about this a little bit last night, my appearance on MTV yesterday. am I that guy from TV last night? Well, yes, I am. I don't know if you caught it, but I was on some kind of MTV news special last night at 9 o'clock Central Time. It started, I think the part that I was on in the show started like right when my show ended yesterday. So if you saw, there was some mini documentary on MTV about white supremacy and extremism and so on, and I was in there for about a half hour. And I addressed this last night on the show. I sort of went into detail about where that documentary came from, where the footage came from. I put out a little thread about it on Twitter, which you can find. It's my pinned tweet, at Nick J. Fuentes on Twitter. And you know, I'm not going to go over the whole thing because I did a stream reacting to it on DLive yesterday. I watched the whole thing, and I also talked about it in pretty great detail yesterday on the show. But after having watched the video, to me, it's just so funny. These people literally have nothing. They have nothing on me. They have nothing on our movement. You know, I watched a documentary and I was kind of apprehensive. I was a little bit anxious, wondering what exactly they were going to include in the documentary because, like I said yesterday, they came to my house and they filmed for a week, a full week, like 6 or 7 days that they were at my house morning until night, filming me, interviews, the show, the Chicago protest. I talked to a few people. And I think I told a couple of my friends and family, like, the only thing that I remember that I said, because it was almost 2 years ago, I said the only thing that I distinctly remember myself saying was, at one point they asked me a question, and my response was, of course Jews run the media. You know, so that was the only thing that I remembered that I said verbatim, explicitly. Everything else is kind of like a fog because it was almost 2 years ago that they filmed it. So I don't know what I said. You know, like I said, there was hours and hours of interviews I couldn't possibly begin to recollect. But the one or two things that I did remember I said is I remembered I called the guy a fag at the Chicago rally, and that was in the documentary last night. And the other thing is we were in the studio. We were in the America First penthouse, and they situated lights and everything, and they were interviewing me. And I forget what prompted this, but they asked me some kind of a question. I said, of course Jews run the media. And that was like the only thing I remembered that I said verbatim. And I'm like, boy, you know, I really hope that doesn't make it in the documentary. But we were fine. I was unoffended, I was not offended by anything I saw in the documentary last night. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that was. I did say a certain number of words, okay, in reference to them. And, you know, I addressed that in the show, which that was probably the only thing that was on optical. But everything else to me just seemed extremely moderate, reasonable. You know, even the sort of like feature of the show, the climax of the show, as I sat down with this Shane Johnson, you know, skinhead loser, and he was trying to tell me, like, I was in the KKK, and I know you're racist. And I, like, explicitly said in the conversation, like, no, but I'm not, I don't actually believe white people are better. I just want to preserve our culture, you know, or something to that effect. So I think I came across as eminently reasonable. You know, if there's, like, liberals out there, maybe they would object to, you know, me saying cuck or fag or something like that. But by far and away, I thought I even looked good in some capacity. So, you know, just as I predicted yesterday, whenever the media do, whenever they do these kinds of hit jobs, it always backfires. You know, not only do they not make me look bad, but they make themselves look bad. Because, of course, I explained how this footage got on television. You know, they presented it as an episode of True Life to me when they filmed it 2 years ago. And then they sat on it for that amount of time. And then they released it as a white supremacist documentary. You know, so I think, if anything, the only person or people that they exposed was themselves. They exposed me as being epic, funny, people, you know, maybe Zoomers. I don't even know who watches MTV, but, you know, maybe millennials, Zoomers. They say, who's this funny guy who's causing all this trouble on YouTube? Maybe they're checking out the show tonight, right? But not a big deal. They're just sort of funny. But if you want to watch that, I did a stream about this on DLive last night, so you could check that out. The replay's available on my channel there. Link is down below. But with that out of the way, not much else going on. I've just been very busy getting ready for the Groiper Leadership Summit. The first round of invitations have been sent out this week. So if you haven't heard back, you know, you're probably not going to be able to go. As I said, and this is the last update I'll give before we dive in. The Groiper Leadership Summit, which is coming up on December 19th, and that is next. I'm sorry, it's December 20th. That is next Friday. That is going to be in West Palm Beach. It's going to be held concurrently alongside Turning Point USA's SAS conference. We're having it in the same city, in the same weekend, and that's supposed to be showing them up, you know, or going there to have a presence at their annual conference. It's their big, it's actually an international annual conference where they bring in all the Turning Point members and influencers, and I think Don Jr. is going to be there and so on. So we're going to have a very small, private get-together, little party. We'll be doing a stream. We'll be streaming speeches by myself, Jacob Lloyd, Patrick Casey, possibly some other influencers might be going. I've got to confirm with some other people, but the first round of invitations have gone out. I think that was either yesterday or the day before, but of course the application is still open. We're still reviewing them. So if you haven't already applied, do apply. We got something like, I want to say close to 400 applications, something like that. So it's a pretty hot event. A lot of people want to get in, and I don't want to say how many people are going or what. I don't really want to give too many details, but it's going to be a relatively small private gathering so that we can ensure security, safety. There were some concerns about that when we first announced, but I think we've demonstrated. I think people realized, oh, it's actually totally legit. It's totally sound. But that's going to happen next Friday. So with that out of the way, we're going to dive into the news. And I want to get into this mass shooting. And of course, it is always a tragedy when mass shootings happen. You know, and that should go without saying that whenever anybody dies, whenever there's these kinds of indiscriminate killings of civilians, that's a terrible thing. But I will say, we all know the game that is played. You know, let's not play dumb here. We all know that for the past probably 5 years, you could probably go back even further than that. You know, false flag attacks go back forever, right? But specifically in the last, like, I would say 5 to 8 years or so, we know that now whenever there is some kind of incident of mass violence in the country, whether it's a bombing or a shooting or, you know, somebody gets run over with a car, there is a rush, a scramble to find out the details, and then depending on who's responsible, that determines what kind of political activation we'll see. And so if it's a white person that does one of these episodes of mass violence, well, what do they call for? Internet censorship and gun control. When it's a non-white person of any variety, well, we just don't talk about it, right? So, of course, it goes without saying that mass killings are tragic, violence is tragic. This is the country we live in. And, you know, a little bit of a detour on this. A lot of times, a lot of the time when we talk about these kinds of things, people talk about how we're so desensitized to violence. Things are so crazy these days. You know, I'll say that the world's a violent place. The country's always been a violent place. You know, you've always had crime. You've always had some degree of political unrest and things. You know, whether it was the 1990s, obviously lots of violence, the 1970s and 60s. Major political unrest and polarization and political violence in the 20s even, you know. So a lot of times whenever people see these things on the news, just a little bit of a detour, everybody says, oh, this is so unique. This is so different. This is so bad. I mean, it is bad that violence is here, but it's always been with us. And I'll say that when we're looking at these things, we can't ignore the political game that is played when it comes to the perpetrators. And we found out that this particular shootout that happened in New Jersey yesterday, the culprits, the suspects, were these black Hebrew Israelites. And I'll read you a little news report summarizing what we know about the shooting in New Jersey. My hair's not, it's not staying elevated here. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, an assailant involved in the prolonged firefight in Jersey City, New Jersey, that left 6 people dead, including one police officer, was linked on Wednesday to the Black Hebrew Israelite movement and had published anti-Semitic posts online, according to a law enforcement official. The violent rampage, on Tuesday, took place largely at a kosher supermarket where 3 bystanders were killed. The authorities now believe that the store was specifically targeted by the assailants, whom they identified as David N. Anderson, who was 47 years old, and Francine Graham, 50 years old. They are both black, by the way. And I bring that up because, of course, whenever the profile of a shooter is white, we always make sure to mention that and draw conclusions, and so I'll do the same here. I'll also add that in this New York Times article in particular, they didn't show a photograph. Didn't show a photograph of the suspects. I found that to be kind of interesting. You know, I've been watching the coverage of this for the past, you know, 24 hours. I don't exactly remember when it occurred yesterday, but I've been watching the coverage since it happened. And throughout the whole thing, even though they had the suspects obviously in custody, never heard a name until today and never even saw a picture. And even in this article, I didn't see one, which I always find that to be somewhat interesting. Whenever, again, we always have to talk about the double standard here and only to ask ourselves why that double standard exists, what the motivation is behind that, you know, what the calculus is for why they would show some suspects in some cases and not other suspects in other cases. You know, why is it that when it's a white shooter, it's plastered everywhere, and when it's a black shooter, well, it's very hush-hush. We don't want to see that. We all know the answer. The article says Mr. Anderson appeared to have a connection to the Black Hebrew Israelite movement, though the extent of his involvement in that group remains unclear. The authorities also suspected that the two assailants may have been involved in a separate killing in a neighboring city in New Jersey, according to New Jersey's Attorney General Gerber Greewall. Investigators also found a manifesto-style note inside the assailant's van. The law enforcement official and another official familiar with the case said that. The document, which was described as brief and rambling, suggested no clear motive for the shooting. Investigators also found a live pipe bomb inside the vehicle. Jersey City's Mayor Stephen Fullup said that Mr. Anderson's online posts included, quote, favorable sentiment towards anti-Semitic groups shared on Facebook. While the exact beliefs of the Black Hebrew Israelites vary among the groups associated with the movement, followers generally believe that the 12 tribes of Israel defined in the Old Testament are different ethnic groups or nations, and that white people are not among them. So this is what happened yesterday, and it's very sort of confusing. I know a lot of people saw this shooting, and it was a pretty horrific shooting. You know, you read some of these reports about what happened the other day, and it's police going door to door with assault rifles. It's helicopters flying overhead. There was actually a funny quote in the New York Times where some officer said, "This is the craziest shootout I've ever seen, and I served in Vietnam," which is kind of like a quintessential boomer thing to say. But, you know, maybe that gives you an idea of what it looked like the other day. And again, we had no information about what was going on until today when we figure out that basically this was a targeted attack on a Jewish deli. Apparently, the story goes that these two assailants were in a white van in a nearby cemetery. A police officer went to check out the van. I guess this van was connected to other crime in the city. They killed the police officer and then later that afternoon drove to a kosher deli, got outside the car with rifles, you know, with presumably assault rifles. They went to the kosher deli, ignoring bystanders and other pedestrians, and they started shooting inside, killing, I think it was three bystanders, three civilians. I believe two of them were Jewish. And so now law enforcement is saying this was a targeted anti-Semitic attack by Black Hebrew Israelites. And to me, my first reaction, and I know this is not going to be a surprise to a lot of people, is, you know, or shocking, and it's not a groundbreaking take, but, you know, just think about what we're talking about here. We're talking about an anti-Semitic mass shooting where they targeted Jewish people in a kosher deli, and nobody seems to really be talking about it. You know, is there a big hashtag? Is there some kind of big coverage about what needs to be done in the wake of this? Is there a big coverage of these suspects? Are they all over the news? Because to me, if the same exact, and we all know this, if the same exact attack, if the same exact incident happened yesterday, but it was white killers, if they had a manifesto that was a white nationalist manifesto instead of a Black Hebrew Israeli manifesto, if they were white guys liking or sharing anti-Semitic content on social media, if it was white guys carrying out the attack, what do you think the media response would be? I think it would be no different than El Paso, no different than Christchurch, no different from, you know, various other synagogue shootings we saw this year and last year, which would mean that they would shut down another website. You know, maybe 4chan would go. Maybe, I don't know what other website even exists anymore that they could go after. I'm sure there would be a commensurate ban on social media, some kind of a purge on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, right? We know that the suspects would be all over the news. We know that the national conversation would be about white supremacy and white nationalism, so on. But this happens, and very cleanly swept under the rug. You know, I was checking all these different news sources today, and while this was all over the news yesterday, today was strangely absent. Once they figured out who the suspects were, all of a sudden, nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody thought this was, you know, a top page, front page story anymore on the internet, and we all know why that is. And it's sort of interesting with this one, too, because what exactly is the angle? Could you say that these are Black nationalists, or are they Jews? Who really are the Jews? And to me, it's actually interesting also in the context of what we saw yesterday. Because what we saw yesterday, of course, was this administration, the Trump administration, redefining Judaism as a nationality. And I find it kind of curious. You know, to me, it is something that I do think about, that they did this attack and people are calling it anti-Semitic. But, of course, these people, the black assailants here, who is it, David Anderson and Francine Graham, they themselves identify as Hebrew Israelites. They identify, in terms of nationality, in terms of ethnicity, and in terms of religion, as Jewish. Now, a lot of people like the SPLC and the ADL are saying, well, they're not Jewish. Why not? I find it very fascinating. It's a big question about Jewish identity because, you know, like we talked about yesterday, in a totally unrelated fashion, but, you know, it did come up when we were talking about this new executive order addressing the BDS movement on college campuses and how Trump is trying to redefine Judaism to be a nationality so that they can use the Civil Rights Act to go after colleges that aren't hardcore enough about Palestinians. The topic of Jewish identity comes up, and as I said yesterday, this is something that comes up in a lot of conversations about immigration and about nationalism. Because, of course, you see that the real Israel, the real Hebrews, the real Jews in Israel, they identify, in many cases when it's convenient for them, as a religion, right? They say that Judaism is purely a religion, and this is why when Israel is a Jewish state and America is supposed to be this multiracial country open for everybody, well, they defend this on the basis of the fact that Judaism is for them a set of ideas, just like America and its constitution is defined by a set of ideas. In other words, Israel's not defined by Jewish ethnic or national identity. It's defined by Jewish ideological or religious identity, as America is defined by our liberal, constitutional, democratic identity. You know, this is how somebody like Ben Shapiro or Charlie Kirk can defend Israeli nationalism and Zionism. Zionism, which is the belief that the Jewish people should have their own homeland, their own Jewish country, while at the same time saying that America should be open for everybody to come in and sell their goods, and whether they're legal or, you know, they've got a green card or whatever else, you know, in some cases even illegal. I think they're in favor of it. They say that that's all okay because America's about ideas and Israel is in some capacity too. But in this shooting, I find it interesting. Here is an example of people that identify as Jewish, and of course, nobody acknowledges that they are. It's sort of funny about this one because it's like, well, what kind of a shooting is it? Is it a black nationalist shooting or is it a Jewish shooting? Are the assailants black or are they Hebrew Israelites? Of course, we all know that they are black. Of course, we all know the black Hebrew Israelite groups are sort of weird, conspiratorial, extremist, black nationalist groups. They may define themselves in a certain way. I think a lot of this Hebrew identity stuff is hokey, conspiracy type stuff. But everybody knows that this is a black nationalist group. Why do we know that? Because they are black. And because Jews are Jews. We know that ethnic Jews exist. They're Ashkenazi, they're Sephardic, whatever. But we know that they are not African Americans that descended from the slave trade. You know, they don't come from sub-Saharan Africa. We know that the people that perpetrated this shooting are not Hebrew Israelites. We know that they are black nationalists using a certain kind of a language. And to me, you know, this is just sort of one layer on top of it that is fascinating in light of other conversations. But again, to me, the big takeaway is the media coverage. You know, it's very trite at this point. You know, like I said, I know it's not a groundbreaking take. I know this is not like going to shock the whole world or anything, but it is worth reminding everybody that we're going to see more political violence in 2020, probably, you know, maybe even within 2019. We're going to see political violence in the next couple of years, as we've seen in the last, you know, so many years. And we know that just the way that probability works and statistics work, because white people remain the majority in the country, we're going to see more examples of extremism from Muslims, blacks, and yes, also whites too. Maybe even the federal government will be involved in that, like I believe they were in previous shootings. Point being is this, we know that whenever these things happen, the response is automatic. They're going to shut down the internet, they're going to shut down guns, and to me, it's really only a matter of time. You know, if we're thinking about this in terms of probability, we know that in the next 5 years, we're going to see more shootings. We know that if there are shootings, some of them will be perpetrated by white people. Some of them will happen to be right-wing, right? Or nationalistic, or white nationalist, or something like that. And we know that every time that happens, like I said, the automatic response is ban people on the internet, ban guns. And so to me, it is basically inevitable that in the next 5 years, I think probably it would happen inevitably anyway that we'd be trending this way with social media and guns. But I think that these are really the flashpoints when the two trends of censorship and gun control kick into high gear. We saw that after El Paso. We saw that after Christchurch. We saw that after Charlottesville. This is the pattern to me. And that is why it is worth calling out when these things happen every other time when it's not a white person. Because again, if the media, if the left, if all these people were really so concerned, the SPLC, the ADL, all those different groups, if they were really so concerned about extremism and anti-Semitism and all these different things, and they didn't just hate white people, they'd be concerned when other people be perpetrating these attacks as well. Because, you know, I think this is also maybe a wake-up call for people or a red pill for people, that if you look at Jewish people in New York City, New Jersey, almost all the anti-Semitism in these cities comes from blacks. You know, this is something that isn't talked about a lot in the media, but I've seen even just this past week or the past couple of weeks, a lot of reports about the anti-Semitism that's directed toward anti-Semitism directed towards Hasidic Jews and other Jews in New York City, in New Jersey, and on the East Coast. And what they mention sometimes, and sometimes they just don't mention it at all, is that almost all of it comes from blacks. And we know this. We know that in New York City, the so-called anti-Semitism or prejudice towards Jews doesn't come from, like, liberal hipsters, right, in Manhattan. It doesn't come from all the white people, you know, in these neighborhoods, trendy neighborhoods like that. We know that it comes largely from probably blacks and Hispanics. In other words, blacks and Hispanics are racist, too. What does this mean? It means that we are moving towards a multiracial country. And it should be acknowledged that white people are not the only ones who commit acts of violence, and we're also not the only ones who are racist. But sometimes it feels like that is the perception. We know that that's all the media talks about. Racist is synonymous with white discrimination against non-white people. But of course, the reason we talk about race on this show is because we know that as the country becomes more multiracial, as we become a so-called majority-minority nation, white people go from a majority to a plurality, we know that racial consciousness will only be exacerbated. We know that people's racial identity or racial in-group preference, or in some sense, militant racial identity, will only increase as these different groups become more consolidated, more concentrated, and greater in numbers in the major population centers, rubbing against all the other different groups. You know, so this is essentially the future. And you got to ask yourself, you know, who is really right about this stuff all along? Who is going to be the scourge of violence in the next 50 years? I don't think white people are going to have a monopoly on it. I think you already see it happening in Europe. You look at what's happening in Paris, Brussels, Berlin, a lot of the major European cities, and they're noticing huge increases in attacks on Jewish people there, and it's all being done by Muslims. And it's like, surprise, surprise, I don't know. I mean, that really sucks, I guess, but hate to say we told you so, right? Gee, if only somebody had said, if only somebody had warned you that mass immigration and the diversification racially and ethnically of a country would lead to racial, sectarian, and religious conflict. Man, if only somebody was out there saying that, right? It's not like they called anybody saying that white nationalist, extremist, racist, and so on. I mean, don't you see what the long term is for this country? It's more things like this. And it's also going to be directed at white people, too. I find it interesting, you know, in this particular case, it was Jews who were the victims of this attack, but the Black Hebrew Israelites are an anti-white hate group. They say that white people are the devil, white people are possessed by the devil, white people are not even human. They say that white people were created in test tubes. You know, so this kind of stuff goes on all the time in their own fringe communities, and most people have never even heard of this stuff, because the media never talks about it. The ADL doesn't talk about it. The SPLC doesn't talk about it. Why? Because it's from non-whites to white people. And that problem we're just going to pretend doesn't exist at all. Or that phenomenon we're going to pretend just doesn't exist. So these kinds of things are always interesting to me. They're always a little bit of a wake-up call for most people. If you didn't realize what's really going on in these cities, it might seem weird or fringe or whatever, but this is probably going to be closer to the norm as we go on down this road towards diversity. But that's New Jersey. I guess we'll see more about this week. We'll probably see more information maybe tomorrow, the next day, about how close these shooters, you know, were to the Black Hebrew Israelites, if they were attached to a particular group or things like that. But for now, it looks like the information is pretty limited. But we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the Afghanistan papers. You know, this is just, again, it's more of the same. I don't really know what else to tell you. The country's getting worse. The government's corrupt. The system's rigged. The rules don't matter, right? I mean, it's more of the same. We've got these papers from the federal government. They were produced by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. They came out this weekend. And like I said at the top of the show, as far as I know, almost nobody in the media was even talking about this. You know, all I heard about this weekend was impeachment, and I heard about the shooting with the Saudis, which I'll try to cover tomorrow. It's another thing I've been meaning to talk about, but other things have been going on. But I haven't really heard so much about these Afghanistan papers, and I wonder why, because this to me is a pretty big deal. This is a report about it from The Guardian. It says, quote, "Hundreds of confidential interviews with key figures involved in prosecuting the 18-year U.S. war in Afghanistan have revealed that the U.S. public has been consistently misled about an unwinnable conflict. Transcripts of the interviews published by the Washington Post after a 3-year legal battle were collected for a lessons learned project by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, a federal agency whose main task is eliminating corruption and inefficiency in the U.S. war effort. The 2,000 pages of documents reveal the bleak and unvarnished views of many insiders in a war that cost $1 trillion, excuse me, and killed more than 2,300 U.S. servicemen and women, with more than 20,000 injured. Tens of thousands of Afghan civilians have also died in the conflict. The interviews were collected beginning in 2014, in addition to SIGAR, and SIGAR is Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR. It says, it says the interviews were collected beginning in 2014, in addition to SIGAR's regular audits to identify what could be learned from successive policy failures in Afghanistan. While many of the failures of the war in Afghanistan have been exposed by SIGAR's work, often in highly technical reports, the cache of interviews offers an easily accessible fly-on-the-wall account. In his own damning intervention, John Sopko, the head of SIGAR, told the paper the assessments contained in the project suggested that, quote, "the American people have constantly been lied to." Two major claims in the documents are that U.S. officials manipulated statistics to suggest to the American public that the war was being won, and that successive administrations turned a blind eye to widespread corruption among Afghan officials, allowing the theft of U.S. aid with impunity. In one scathing assessment, Douglas Lute, a lieutenant general who served as the White House Afghan war czar during the George W. Bush and Barack Obama administrations, told interviewers in 2015, quote, "we were devoid of a fundamental understanding of Afghanistan. We didn't know what we were doing." Which, you know, at this point, to read that from a government document, it's sort of like, oh, really? That's so surprising. That's so shocking. You know, you probably didn't even need to read a lot of these government documents to draw the same conclusion. You know, lieutenant generals, inspector generals, people that are generals in the war saying, we don't know what the hell we're doing. Oh, really? Wow, I'm glad we read these in the Afghan papers. It says, speaking frankly, like other interviewees, on the understanding that what he was saying at the time was confidential, he added, quote, "what are we trying to do here? We didn't have the foggiest notion of what we were undertaking. If the American people knew the magnitude of this dysfunction, 2,400 lives lost," he goes on. In another interview, Jeffrey Eggers, a retired Navy SEAL and White House staffer for Bush and Obama, said, quote, "what do we get for this $1 trillion effort? Was it worth $1 trillion? I think the answer is a resounding no, wouldn't you say? And there was actually a really good Twitter thread about this by somebody named Richard Hanania. I don't know if he's friendly to us or not. Oh, he actually follows me. Epic. I just noticed that. He published a really good thread, which is on my timeline, sifting through a lot of these documents, exposing some of the worst of it, you know, because this is pretty general stuff in The Guardian. They're saying, we didn't know what we were doing. The people are being lied to. Yeah, well, I think we got the gist, right? I think everybody kind of came away watching what's been going on for the last 20 years. We've been fighting the war for 20 years. If that's not an indication that we don't know what we're doing, I don't think we really need to read it in a paper, right? But there's some pretty good examples of this in this Twitter thread. Like I said, it's Richard Hanania. He writes on Twitter, quote, Ambassador Douglas Lute says we spent $1 million per soldier to get them Burger King and bottled water. And I'll read you, this is directly from these Afghanistan papers. It says, the Department of Defense's budget is roughly $120 billion per year, which should include about $1 million per year per soldier. That means approximately $100 billion per year on soldiers alone. Did we really need the Burger King's, gyms, bottled water shipped over the Arabian Sea? Department of Defense's budget to build ANSF in 2010 to 2011, or 2011 to 2012, was the single largest item in the budget. It even exceeded the Joint Strike Fighter budget for 2 years. They were spending $10 billion each year that was appropriated to $12 billion, and they realized they couldn't spend it all and had to give back $1 billion. We can't just shovel one-year money at this problem. You can't possibly build this facility that fast or this program this fast. So understand, $1 million per year per soldier. There's a lot of stuff in there that's kind of technical, but the statistic that is, to me, the takeaway is we've been at this war for 20 years. Every year, we spend $1 million per soldier. So that means that every Afghan veteran, every Afghan soldier in the entire war effort at this point in time could have a net worth of $20 million if they just gave them the cash transfer. That is the magnitude of the money we're spending. I know we throw around these figures a lot, you know, $1 trillion for the Afghan war, $6 trillion combined with the Iraq war and other conflicts in the Middle East. But I think this puts it in perspective, $1 million per year per soldier. So if we hadn't fought the war in Afghanistan, and by the way, this is just money for troops alone. This is 1/10 of the entire budget, you know, the entire cost of the war. 1/10, as we could have given every single soldier $1 million per year. It says we were also pouring money into huge infrastructure projects to obligate money that was appropriated to show we could spend it. And we were building infrastructure in ways that Afghanistan could never sustain or even use in some cases. So basically, the government's throwing all this money, and they don't even know what to spend it on. So they just build up useless infrastructure, they spend it on useless projects, spend it on a bunch of garbage, simply to show that they are spending the money, because they don't have anything to spend it on. This is one of the first documents. Another document, this is number 12 in the Twitter thread. This is a memo from Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld, who was the Secretary of Defense at the time, dated September 8th, 2003. He says, quote, I have no visibility into who the bad guys are in Afghanistan or Iraq. I read all the intel from the community, and it sounds as though we know a great deal, but in fact, when you push at it, you find out we haven't got anything that is actionable. We are woefully deficient in human intelligence. This is 2 years, almost 3 years into the war. Donald Rumsfeld says, we don't even know who the bad guys are. Here's another document. This is number 24 in the thread. It says, the policy is that the U.S. keeps every single car, truck, and tank running 24/7 in Afghanistan. This is a memo. You've got somebody named Dr. Rondeau, who says, as far as Congress is concerned, if the military asks for sustainment, it must get it. You are putting people's lives at risk. The question is, do you need to idle every single tank, car, truck, 24/7 because of your concerns about security? The cost of that, and he's interrupted by Dr. Lutz, who says, do they actually do that? Dr. Rondeau says, yes. Dr. Lutz says, the trucks are running everywhere. The other doctor says, yes. I mean, it is standard operating procedure on the basis to idle their trucks. For the quick getaway? Yeah. Wow. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So understand, for 20 years, every single car, truck, and tank in Afghanistan, I'm sure thousands of vehicles have been idling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 20 years. This is official Afghan policy. Here's another one. It says, warlords were paid to provide security so they would attack American soldiers and create a need to spend more on security. These are the same doctors. Dr. Rondeau says, right, we learned from our experience in Afghanistan. And this is where I think SOPCO became very alerted very quickly to the connection between sustainment costs, warfighting costs, and then reconstruction impacts was around the host nation trucking contract that we had, which was, I think, 7 different contractors were providing transportation and also security along the way to pay off warlords, essentially. Or they themselves were warlords who were in this game, this double game, or it actually paid sometimes periodically to destroy and target convoys because it escalates the cost for providing security. It's crazy. Bring another load in, it disappears in trucks, offload the fuel, it's a black market. So basically they're saying that we are hiring warlords in Afghanistan to protect these convoys, to transport U.S. troops, and obviously if we're paying them all this money, it does create a perverse incentive on their black market where warlords who are tasked with protecting American troops are attacking American troops so that it creates the need for more protection, so that we pay the people attacking us to protect us. This is the war in Afghanistan. This is the war, which, by the way, we cannot end. Which, by the way, we cannot bring the troops home because of, like, regional stability. I don't know, some kind of argument like this. This must persist after 20 years. Here's another document. Oh, I'm sorry, that's one I just read. Here's another one. It says, 6 months after he was appointed, Bush didn't know who his top general in Afghanistan was and didn't care. General McNeil had no guidance about what he should be doing in the country. Here's the document directly. It says, just before 3 p.m., Rumsfeld got a few minutes alone with the commander-in-chief. Rumsfeld asked Bush whether he wanted to arrange a meeting with Army General Tommy Franks, the head of the U.S. Central Command, and Army Lieutenant General Dan McNeil, who had been serving as commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan for the past 6 months. Bush was perplexed. He said, quote, who is General McNeil? Rumsfeld wrote in the memo. I said, he is the general in charge of Afghanistan. Bush replied, well, I don't want to meet with him. So the president didn't even know who the top general was. The top general, the commanding general of Afghanistan, didn't know his name. Here's another one. It says, members of the Afghan government stole $1 billion from Kabul's bank, which is the equivalent of 1/12 of the GDP the year before. It says less than 2 months after Salehi's catch and release, an even bigger scandal arose to test the Obama administration's resolve. Kabul Bank, the country's biggest, nearly collapsed under the weight of $1 billion in fraudulent loans, an amount equal to 1/12 of the country's entire economic output the year before. The Afghan government engineered an emergency bailout to stem a run on the bank as angry crowds lined up to withdraw their savings. Investigators soon determined Kabul Bank had falsified its books to hide hundreds of millions of dollars in unsecured loans to politically connected business executives, including the president's brother, Mahmoud Karzai, and the family of Fahim Khan, the warlord then serving as the country's first vice president. An unnamed U.S. Treasury Department official said, quote, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 20 here. It had elements that you could put into a spy novel and the connections between people who own the Kabul Bank and those who run the country. And this is the last document. The last two documents, it says, investigators gathered data on corruption, put it on thumb drives, someone wiped the files, and then used them for movies. So this is directly from the Afghanistan papers. It says, I made sure to archive everything, saved twice. We had 10 USB thumb drives. We got equipment. We could release classified info to other folks. But then we went through the second rotation, change of people, and they didn't look back at what we had done. The 10 thumb drives were wiped clean and used for movies. And then it says in parentheses, entertainment. So they got rid of all, they filled up 10 USB thumb drives full of information they had archived about the corruption in Afghanistan, some of which we have talked about. And they find that when they rotated the officials tasked with overseeing this, they had wiped out the thumb drives. I guess they just didn't know what was on them and replaced them with movies for entertainment. And then lastly, here's another one. It says, I made sure... this is the same document here. It says, according to one audit, 40% of contract funds went to criminals, corruption, or the insurgency. So in other words, the people that we were fighting. So these are the Afghanistan documents. Maybe you can start to see why nobody was talking about this. Maybe you can start to see why. And this was released in the Washington Post. So it's kind of a big deal over the weekend. But I haven't really seen anything about this in any other major mainstream media outlet since they came out. And I think you know why. This is the kind of activity that is going on, by the way, in every single war that we are involved in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, we're in West Africa, we are in Somalia. I mean, we are in just about every country in the Middle East. And this is the kind of conduct that has gone on for 20 years. And so it's worth remembering whenever we talk about, you know, for example, I think we talked either on Monday or last week, I read a report about the threat posed by Iran. You know, there was talk about, it was last week, about sending an additional 14,000 troops into the Middle East so we could posture against the threat posed by Iran. When they talk about possibly new wars in Iran, when they talk about how we must sustain a presence in northeastern Syria, which was in the news over the summer, when they talk about how we have to have some kind of peaceful or graceful exit from Afghanistan after our talks got canceled with the Taliban over the summer, these are the conflicts we're talking about. This is the kind of activity. You know, they make it out like, oh, it's the American boys in blue, the American military, and super sophisticated political analysis. I love this. You know, people like Dan Crenshaw, other people that served in the armed service or the foreign service committees in the Senate and the House, people in the DOD, people are in the military. A lot of neocons, in short, a lot of Zionist, in many cases Jewish neocons will tell us, well, you just don't understand. You see, the average person might say, we've been in Afghanistan for 20 years, it's time to come home. But something like Dan Crenshaw says, no, you just don't get it. You don't have the knowledge that somebody who served in the war has. You don't have the knowledge that somebody in the Department of Defense has. Somebody who serves in these committees in Congress has. These wars are necessary. We must remain in the Middle East to ensure stability or something. This is what they're talking about. They're talking about so much money that is being spent on these wars that the people tasked with spending the money literally don't even know what to do with it. And you could go through all the documents, 2,000 documents just like this, where they talk about billions of dollars in projects, billions of dollars in projects that don't even serve a practical objective. They just start doing things because they have to show Congress that they're spending the money so that they could keep getting more money for the war. You know, it's just like with this other document I just read about, we're paying people to protect us, and the people we're paying to protect us are attacking us, so that we can pay them more to protect us. Do you see the insanity of what's going on here? And who do you think gets rich off of all this stuff? Of course, this is the bloated Department of Defense. It's the bloated State Department. It's all the people tasked with this in the Pentagon, this disgusting bureaucratic machine, this cadre in the military-industrial complex, and to some extent, you know, obviously the foreign lobbies that brought us to war in Afghanistan to begin with. This is what we're talking about when we talk about these foreign wars. There's really just no excuse. And that's why it's becoming increasingly frustrated that these things are still going on. You know, for a long time, I would say, okay, the president hasn't gotten us out of Syria yet. Well, give him time. Give him time. He can't remake the world order in one day. We're still in Afghanistan. There was actually a troop surge in Afghanistan after he got inaugurated. Well, you got to give him a little bit of time. You know, these things are tough. These things are difficult. It's a large bureaucratic machine. War in Iraq is still going on. You got to give them time. Well, it's been 3 years. And the problem is not only not getting better, it's getting worse. You know, we send out 1,000 troops from Syria into Western Iraq, and immediately 300 more go in. We talk about bringing home troops from Afghanistan, or rather, bringing home troops from Iraq. We reduced the amount of troops by a few thousand in Iraq last year, and they go directly into Afghanistan. Then we double the amount of troops in Afghanistan. We talk about pulling some troops out of some areas, and then we send 1,000 more to Saudi Arabia to counter Iran. And when you see what's going on, you realize there's just no excuse. Arguments about foreign policy, realism, grand strategy. And I've said some of these things before. I do think there's some kind of a practical interest in the Middle East to have some kind of a presence. Maybe you have a military base, right? Or maybe you have an embassy, something like that. But this is out of control. $1 million per year per soldier, billions of dollars on projects that are useless. It's literally just throwing money in the garbage. And you got to ask yourself, when it comes down to this, there are reports that showed that in some provinces in Afghanistan, provinces that are the size of U.S. counties, to give you an idea of how small they were, I saw a report that said America was pouring in $1 billion per day. Per day into a province in Afghanistan the size of a U.S. county. Do you know how big a county is? I don't know, but what is that? You know, like 10 square miles, depending on where you are, depending on what state it is, what the population's like. You know, Cook County, not a huge landmass. That landmass, the equivalent of that in Afghanistan, they're pouring millions, billions of dollars a day in infrastructure projects every year. I look at this stuff and it's like you want to cry. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't care that much. I'm kind of an apathetic zoomer at this point. you know, it doesn't even really hurt anymore. It's just more of the same on some level, right? But if you think about how much money has just been sent, is basically just been set on fire, thrown in the garbage, flushed down the drain, whatever, you know, whatever you want to say about it, the money's just being wasted. But even worse than that is think about where the money could have been spent. Think about your life. $1 million per year per soldier. Think about how much money you spend on healthcare. Think about how much money you spend on rent. Think about, for crying out loud, how much you spend on taxes. Before we begin with your expenses, how much you spend on taxes every year. And this is what it's going to? Seriously? And, you know, to me, at the end of the day, you know, to sort of tie it in with some of the other issues we talk about, the only people that really care about this stuff at the end of the day are the taxpayers. You know, I hate to bring it back to that, but on some level, when we talk about the diversification of our country, one of the unintended consequences, or maybe one of the intended consequences, I should say, is that the people that are coming into this country don't care about stuff like this. The people that are in this country don't care about the Afghanistan papers. They don't care that this money's being wasted. They don't care. They're not reading the Afghanistan papers. They're not reading these government documents because in many cases, they're not paying taxes. Or if they are, I don't think they're informed or probably not even bright enough to understand what's going on. Do you understand why politicians are bringing in hordes of foreigners? It's because hordes of foreigners don't say boo about what's happening in our society. They cannot hold the government accountable. They cannot hold the interests accountable. You know, in this country, there is a history of people having a popular reaction against a government that goes out of control, or even in some cases, private industry people going out of control. You know, you look at the progressive movement in America, which I'm not a fan of, in the 1910s and 1920s. That was a reaction by people and, to some extent, certain interests against abusive oligarchies and monopolies. You know, you see in the 1970s and 1980s, there was a reaction against government corruption. That doesn't happen in a country of people that don't even speak the language. That doesn't happen in a country made up of people that don't even graduate high school. In some cases, aren't even literate, can't even read or speak the language. That's what we're talking about. So in some capacity, I look at this, and it is on a certain level about the military-industrial complex. It's about foreign wars and all that. I don't think any of that's really new. To me, I also think about the fact that the amount of people that actually care about things like this that would say, okay, time to vote for somebody who's actually going to change these things, that window is closing for a country that does that. That window is closing for a demographic or a constituency that even cares about these things. And I think I've talked about this a little bit before, but that is why they're bringing in these people. The people that are coming across the border, to sort of tie it into immigration, I think it's very related. The people coming across the border are people that are going to go to work, they're going to take their checks from the government, and they're not going to ask any questions, right? They're going to go to the public schools, they're going to be focused on, you know, consumer culture, or gang culture, you know, whatever it is, whatever they're bringing over, and they're not going to be looking at these things. They're not going to be pulling the ticket, Republican or Democrat, based on policy, outcomes, anything like that. It's just yet another reason why this demographic change stuff is a disaster. But I know that's not directly related, but I do think it's worth tying in, reminding people. The only people that care about Afghanistan papers is us. You know what I mean by that? The only people that care about Afghanistan papers and pension schemes and the deficit and entitlement spending, anything like that, the only people that care about this stuff is us. You know, conservatives, we'll say, Republicans, we'll say it like that. We know that the Democrats not care about things like this. But anyway, nice little tie in there to kind of mix it up a little bit. I don't mean telling you that the war in Afghanistan is a big waste and the government's incompetent and they're lying to you. That's not really news, so maybe that'll spice it up a little bit. But we're going to dive in. We're going to take a look at our super chats. We'll see what all you guys are saying about this stuff. I don't even know. At this point, I don't even know what's more outrageous. The fact that this is going on or the fact that we're not even surprised about it anymore. Not to go like dramatic mode on, not to go melodramatic mode on you. But seriously, at this point, what is more outrageous? That it is so bad? Or the fact that nobody's even really shocked or surprised? This comes out of the Washington Post. I feel like 50 years ago, this would be a bombshell. And people would be talking about this for weeks. You know, maybe we knew in some way, maybe on a certain level, we knew, of course, that the DOD is bloated and the Afghanistan war is a waste and that it has been fought incompetently and so on. But to have these documents produced where we have people at the highest levels, I mean, they're literally saying, we have no idea what we're doing. We're wasting money. We're paying people that are actually our enemies. We don't know who our enemies are. We're paying, you know, $1 million per soldier a day. To see something like that, I feel like a long time ago, people would have cared about that. It feels like nobody cares. And honestly, I think that's when you really are in trouble, is when people don't even care. Because you could have problems in a country. You know, it's like Donald Trump said. You know, you can make mistakes, right? You made a mistake. We can make mistakes. But that one was a beauty, he said about the Iraq War. We can have corruption, right? The government can fail. But the problem becomes when nobody even really cares anymore. Nobody's even really surprised anymore. We take a look at that and people go, oh, people are focused on impeachment. Seriously? But anyway, like I said, we'll take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. We've got Daniel who says Anglos are just meds with better food. Yeah, maybe it's the opposite. I think meds are Nords with better food and bigger brains. Mr. Corgi says, I know we were goofing MTV, but your mom's email kind of got me. It was a sharp reminder that these people truly hate us. Sorry they did that, and good on Mama Fuentes for going claws mode. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, some people are making fun of me for posting that, but and you got to understand, at the time, I was a teenager. And moreover, these people were invited into my home. It was to give everybody a sense of really just how nasty what they did is. That it went above and beyond the media lying about you. You know, typically when the media lies about me, it's like they'll call me on my phone, we'll do an interview, and they'll call me a white nationalist the next day. And that's the extent of it. You know, somebody will say, hey, I want to interview you. And I'll say, oh, okay, you know, call me at this number, whatever. And we'll talk, they'll ask me questions, and then they'll frame it in a way that's dishonest, right? That's usually the long and short of media deception. The point of publishing that email, everybody's saying, oh, Nick wants his mommy to fight his battles for him. The point of publishing that email is to show just how above and beyond these people went to be shitty. You know, that they came into my home, you know, with my family, they met my parents, they met my dog, you know, and my parents showed them hospitality. Made them snacks, food, whatever. I mean, we're very nice to them. And I know, you know, people are going to say, oh, well, it serves you right. You trusted MTV. We'll say that. And on some level, that is true. But it's also to show that it's still wrong. These people are still bad people, and they're still wrong for doing that. Even if we expect that, even if that's become the norm, even if on a certain level, we shouldn't have been hospitable to people like this, it just goes to show that this is how nasty they are. Just the lack of humanity. That I even posted a text where one of the producers texted. It was in a group text with me and my parents because we were coordinating how it's going to go down. And this Pete Ritchie character said, hey, you know, just so we're on for 10 a.m. tomorrow, whatever. And my mom says, oh, hi, it was so nice meeting you. You were so, we really trust you. You're so genuine. It was great that you got to meet Al, whatever. This is the kind of people they are, you know, that they get this kind of hospitality, not just from me, but from, you know, my parents. We're a middle class, normal family, you know, neighborhood people from Chicago. And this is how they treat people in the country that they're going to then go and blow this up and make it a white supremacy documentary, turn on a dime and just show that they lied to our faces, lied through their teeth, smiling, looking us in the eyes. The reason to publish the email is to show you this is the inhumanity of these people. And the critics, you know, left-wing people can say, oh, Nick Fuentes is racist. Nick Fuentes is a jerk. You could say a lot of nasty things about me, but I'm not inhuman like that. You know, I think anybody who knows me, anybody who's met me personally, whether they like me, don't like me, knows that we have some sense of integrity, some sense of honor. And all that was meant to do is to show that, I mean, this is just like another level of media dishonesty, just downright deception, evil, villainy, all the rest. They're not good people. And we should not feel bad for pointing that out. We need to bring back shame. We're better than that. We are better than they are. Why do we take ourselves out of that game? You know, a lot of people think it's, I don't know what they think. Maybe they think it's naive to talk about morality, to say that the media is dishonest or evil. I don't think it betrays naivete or foolishness or whatever to call them evil. I think that's what's necessary. These are bad people, and they're doing things that are very wrong, that anybody could recognize. These are very terrible things that they are doing. And we should call them out on that. People should be shamed for that. We should be better than that. We should expect more from people. You know, let's bring a little bit of that back. When we play the game and we're all cynics and we're all, you know, and we have to play like we're cynics. We have to play in a practical way. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I am saying that we also shouldn't discard the moral card either, because ultimately we have that one and that matters to people. So shame on Jason Wolf, you know, big shocker that Jason Wolf was a fucking duplicitous piece of shit. Would have never guessed it by looking at his picture, right? Jason Wolf, Pete Ritchie, all these characters, shame on them. And we know the ultimate judgment, right? We don't have to be worried about, punishment being meted out eventually. But let's see, we've got Jacob who says, what's your problem with Turkey Tom? I don't really know Turkey Tom, but, I mean, the guy seems to just be antagonizing me, so I blocked him on Twitter. Joshua Larson says, I wrote the epilogue you deserve from that gay MTV dumpster fire. Nick is now still just as epic, cool, and based in Red Pill. Yeah, well, very accurate. Ray Respector says, if you're allowed to say, what's your favorite really good comics comic? Favorite really good comics comic? Well, why? What do you mean? Why would I not be allowed to say it? Well, there's a lot of good ones. A lot of memorable ones. Oh, I don't know. Probably one of my favorites. I like the Negative XP one, which I can't really... Yeah, okay. Now I see what you mean when you say, if you can't explain. The Negative XP one is very good, where it's like the school project. I also really like the Shut Up Bitch one. What is it, the female day or male day or whatever, and, the women are like, let's summon our nagging power, and the guy goes, shut up, bitch. That one's probably my favorite. But there's a lot of good ones. I really do. I haven't seen one that I don't like so far. I'll just say that. I like the one with the id, the ego, and the super ego. The guy is rubbing his... the skin on his fingers. It says a lot of esoteric stuff. Probably most people are not going to get that, but if you're a fan of really good comics, you'll know what I'm talking about. Jacob says, Pete Diabroska, Avi is an homage to Scott Greer's. Oh, yeah, that's right, because Pete's is like him being smug on Tucker Carlson, just like Scott's. I never noticed that, but that's actually pretty perfect. I just looked it up. That's actually hilarious. It's the same. The Leaf says, you came off chat and very angular in that hit piece. I'm sure MTV viewers are dying to learn more. 100 million Twitter followers. Here we come. 100 million. Yeah, I don't know if I came off as chat. I mean, I guess I came off as angular. Certainly angular, young, definitely cool, moderate. Calling some guy a fag. Calling some girl a bitch. Yeah, pretty epic. Jordy says, which video does he talk about Ted Bundy? I don't know who you're talking about. Glenn says, I always assumed conversations on MTV were fake and gay, but I guess they actually aren't. They just edit them to look fake and produce it over dramatic. Yeah, it seems to me that that's what it is. A lot of it is staged, though, too. Nothing that I did was staged, but I feel like a lot of what they do on MTV is staged. In my case, you're right, it was just like, you know, gay editing and, you know, like you said, producing it in an overdramatic way with music and lighting and so on. These people are such scumbags. It's so obvious. Like, there was one shot where they got me and I'm on my desk and the room is dark and there's a lamp on me. It's supposed to look very ominous and I'm supposed to look like some kind of unhinged guy in the dark. And I literally remember shooting it that day and they were like, okay, so what we want to do for this shot is we're just going to change up the lighting. They said, we're just going to change up the lighting because we want to get a lot of different kinds of shots. They said, we don't want it to look sort of like everything looks the same. We want to get, you know, some shots are behind the desk, some over here, some of the lighting's different. I'm like, okay. So they turn off the lights, they turn on this little lamp. And you know, while they're doing this, I said, you know what? Let's turn the lights on. I said, I don't like how this looks. I said, you know, I don't know if you're going to do this, but I've seen this trick before where they do the hacker known as 4chan, you know, in the dark and very ominous. I mean, I basically predicted. I knew exactly the shot they were going for. I said, you know what? Let's turn the lights on. You want this to be realistic? I don't do this stuff in the dark. I do it with the lights on. I'm not like a bat. I'm not a raccoon, okay? I don't know why they would turn the lights off for this. So I made them turn the lights on. And lo and behold, that's exactly how they use that shot. You know, they're panning into the room. The lights are off. I'm illuminated by the lamp. I want 100 million subscribers. Whoa, what a scary dude. This is kind of a scary guy. underground in a cavern, you know, like some kind of cryptid or something. Evil intentions, he's in the shadows, right? I mean, these are the connotations they're trying to create. And they just lie to me. They're like, yeah, we want to get like a number of different shots. And I even called it on them while they were doing it. I said, I know exactly like what you're doing here. I don't browse Twitter with the lights off. Like I said, I'm not a nocturnal animal. I am not an earthworm, right? Or a centipede. I was a based centipede, not like the actual centipede, like a Trump supporting centipede. But you know what I mean? I do these things in the light. You can think I'm a bad guy, but people that are bad still got it in the daytime and they still, you know, have lights in their house, right? So anyway, yeah, you're right. It was the editing, the framing, that's how they do it. Jacob says, your stunning intellect blows me away every time. That's so true. Well, thanks. Yeah, I know. I am stunningly intellectual. It's very true. Princess Amunda says, these sneaky, trifling ass nibbas trying to shut you down with jump cuts and cookie jokes when all they got to do is show you shooting dogs in Grand Theft Auto. Yeah, I think people would be a lot more offended by that than anything else. Then they'd say, that's the final straw for me. I'm out of here. Senseless Tuning says, what can we do to refocus Trump back to immigration policy? We have made zero progress on DACA, and rhinos are still pushing amnesty bills currently. The Dems are weak from impeachment. The time is now. That's so stupid. First of all, look, that's rude. That was rude of me to say. You're not stupid. But this question is very stupid. What do you mean, what can we do to force his hand on immigration? Don't you understand there's really nothing we can do on this? Outside of a long-term campaign to get, like, meaty people to put pressure on him and so on, what do you mean we? What are you going to do? And I've heard this before. We're going to light up the phone lines at the White House. I mean, maybe that doesn't do nothing, but it certainly doesn't do anything consequential. We know this. You know, people have been lighting up the switchboards for years. I took a lot of heat for this. I used to say it doesn't have any effect. People would say, why would you countersignal? Why would you countersignal calling up the White House, you know, getting people to call up the White House and say, Mr. President, you should do this. And I used to say, do you really think the fucking President of the United States is going to change his mind on policy based on, you know, angry boomers calling at the White House? Now, maybe on a day-to-day level, it does change. You know, maybe if they're planning on doing something one day and they get a big, bad public response, maybe they change it. But who wins in the end? You know, unless you're calling every day, thousands of people, whatever, it makes no difference. Jared Kushner, Sheldon Adelson, these are the people that are running the show behind the scenes, not the people lighting up the switchboards, not, you know, Joe Schmo watching boldly on Blaze TV, okay? I hate to tell you that. Hate to break it to you, but I think generally speaking, it's kind of out of our control. Unless you got billions of dollars for Trump's reelection, I don't know why he'd listen to you instead of Sheldon Adelson on immigration. And that's just how I feel about it. Now, lighting up the switchboards, maybe it's, like I said, it's better than doing nothing, I guess. People like me agitating for immigration helps in some capacity, but Ann Coulter, Tucker, all these guys have been on his case for years. It doesn't make a difference. He's the president at the end of the day. What are you going to do? And Dems are weak from impeachment. The time is now. What planet are you living on? The Democrats are not weak. The Democrats are certainly not weak from impeachment. If anything, the Democrats are strangling this administration to death with impeachment. What are you talking about? They're weak from impeachment? If impeachment made them weak, why would they pursue it? It was their choice. They authorized it. They drafted the articles. They're voting on them. They're weak from impeachment. They've activated their base now probably more than ever. And they are also the majority in the House. So I don't know what you expect to happen, you know, how that changes the calculus in our favor. So sorry, but that's just, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I don't know what kind of drugs you're on here. Magazog says, did you notice Trump's Jewish nationality executive order doesn't recognize any Jewish people of color? The Jewish people now only come from Europe. Yeah, that is interesting. Ashkenazi, Jewish, yeah, really makes you think. Jacob says, pee pee poo poo. Yeah, Take Cover says, the masses be like, Nick has never listened to one of my criticisms or pieces of advice ever, but this time will be different. Just trust the plan. Exactly. Look, I've virtually never been wrong. Okay, I don't mean to say that to brag. I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm not even trying to be funny to say that. Virtually everything I've done in the last 3 years has worked. Everything I've been saying for the last 3 years has been almost completely correct. With some minor exceptions and some minor areas, I have really yet to hear the so-called critics get one over on me, really in like any capacity. And moreover, almost all these people that are criticizing me, and by the way, criticism is a dime a dozen. It's like Kanye says, I don't take advice from people less successful than me. All these people, the unsolicited advice, it's like, look, no offense, but I mean, you get a level of expertise when you do this that a lot of people just don't understand how these things work. I don't mean to say that like I'm the smartest guy in the world or like other people are dumb, but it is to say that, I mean, and people know this, when it comes to your job, when it comes to your craft, just by doing it every day and because it's your livelihood, you know more about it than other people. I mean, you know the ins and outs of it better than other people. You know, when it comes to the community guidelines, the terms of service, YouTube, platform, social media, I've kind of picked up a thing or two, you know, doing it every day for 3 years and it being like my main thing, right? So all this is to say, a lot of the criticism is either from people that don't know what they're talking about, or it's people that are malicious. It's people that have an axe to grind and they're framing shitting on me as criticism, which I've been seeing a lot of. So look, just trust the plan. I've gotten myself and I've gotten the show and I've gotten this movement in a large way. I've gotten all of that this far and we will continue to win. And look, you can trust the plan or you don't, but I'm going to win in spite of it. So just trust the plan. Just trust the plan. Have I ever steered anybody wrong here? Punished Huey says, might join the priesthood. Please pray for my success. Also, last time I'll write this, trust the plan or do you think Father James Martin is based? Well, yeah, we'll pray for you. And I don't know what, that's a sentence. I thought you said it was a question. Trust the plan or you think James Martin is based? That's kind of a, trust the plan, you know, so you think this guy who is cringe is based. I don't know what you're trying to get out with that one. Inner City Democrats says, did they ever respond to your mom's email? No response. Greg says, oi, mate, you're a cheeky one, bruv. When you coming to London town, isn't it? I don't know. I'll probably come to the United Kingdom sometime in 2020. The reason I want to go there is because I want to see it, but I know that I probably will get banned for life at some point in the next 24 months. So I've wanted to go to the United Kingdom, and at the same time, I know that I'll probably get banned for life imminently. So I'm trying to get in there just before, you know, I'm trying to sneak in there. Well, not sneak. I mean, obviously, I'll go through the legal process, but you know what I mean. Trying to get in there before they realize, oh, oi, he's you know, he doesn't have a license for that, you know? So I don't know, probably 2020. Ja G says, do you like planning out your day and following a schedule or being spontaneous? What kind of question is this? I don't know. I kind of like being spontaneous, I guess. RA says, bruh, these new TOS, our whole existence really does boil down to us being the kids having fun in the back of the class and then getting tattled on by people that run the teacher every chance they get. I know. Well, the new terms of service, it's like, you can't make fun of anybody because of their gender expression, their sexual orientation, their race, their appearance, their physical characteristics, their religion. So what can you even really do? What can you even really do? They say there's this new hyper severe policy about harassment and so on. And it's like, really? You can't say anything anymore. It's like you can't deny mainstream events. In other words, you can't have a, you know what I'm talking about. You can't have like an alternative take on any mainstream events, 9/11 or any like major historical events, 9/11 shootings. Can't be a conspiracy theorist. Can't be, you know, making fun of people. Can't be harassing people. Can't be, I mean, like, what kind of content are you supposed to make? Slime tutorials? I'm supposed to show people recipes for slime? I'm supposed to, what, make crafts? I'm supposed to do, even pranks. They banned prank channels. If people do these, like, extreme pranks, they ban that. What the fuck are you supposed to do? Make travel vlogs? Do clothing hauls? Buy this. Check out these things I bought. Check out this thing I bought. Check out this service you can buy. I mean, they want to make it a platform for advertisements. You watch advertisements before the videos, and increasingly the only videos you can make are advertisements. Here's my lifestyle vlog, and by the way, buy Hydro Flask. Here's my lifestyle vlog, and by the way, here's, air cutters, new whatever. Here's this hotel. Oh, we're trying a $5 burger. Now we're trying a $20 burger. You know, that's the only content you can make is buying things, because you can't talk about politics. You can't do pranks. You can't make fun of people. You can hardly do comedy because of that. You can't talk about conspiracy theories. You can't have any, like, new information. They artificially suppress people that are not mainstream news sources. They artificially elevate people that are mainstream news sources. What the fuck kind of content are you supposed to make? Apologies for the language, but I mean, really, with these kinds of policies, it's insanity. They're like, we want to balance free speech and also, you know, safety and people being comfortable. The internet is so retarded now. It used to be that you could, like, the internet was synonymous with, like, the Wild West. Do you remember that? I remember that. When I was growing up, the internet, he goes on the internet. He got that from the internet. The internet was synonymous with the most outrageous, the most extreme, the weirdest, the fringe. You go on the internet. When I was in grade school, we would go on the internet and look up dead baby jokes, which is terrible. But, you know, that's what the internet represented. You need to watch, who's that guy? It's Ray William Johnson. Ray William Johnson. I don't know if he was that extreme, but he was like the quintessential internet. You know what I'm talking about? You'd go back and you'd watch gore videos. You'd go back and watch, like, you know, people be sending around very, very graphic videos for shock value. That's what the internet used to be. It was synonymous with the most outrageous, and now it's the opposite. You can't say anything anymore. You can barely swear. You can't use racial slurs. Can't do conspiracy theories. Like I said, pranks. What are we even supposed to do? It sucks. It's terrible. Real life is becoming epic again. Now it's like you go in real life to say the N-word. Before, you go on the internet to say the N-word. Anon says, do you like Captain Marvel? Have sex. You didn't like Captain Marvel? Have sex, incel. I don't know why that's, what did it take, like 3 months for the super chat to get here? Did you send this one in May or April? Jeez. Captain Marvel. Yeah, that's really, really timely stuff. Cringe and Blue Pills says, live in the Portland area. I just ordered my America First hoodie. Do you think Antifa will recognize your logo? Want to rep America First, but don't want to be assaulted? I don't know. I mean, there is a lot of Antifa activity in Portland. I don't know. You live there. Use your own discernment. I don't live in Portland. I guess it depends on where you are. Why would you ask me that? How would I know? I'm not an Antifa and I don't live in Portland. Slavia says, Shane Johnson opening his mouth and displaying his room temperature IQ disproves white supremacy. God bless, King. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Samuel says, Dave Smith has a lot of integrity. Yeah, big agree on that. He does. Save Western Civilization Now says, Vox Day wants to challenge you to a written debate on whether a multiracial society is inevitable. Do you think you're going to accept a written debate with Vox Day? No, I don't think I'm interested in that. I only debate people that are relevant. Squidward says, Nick BTFO'd by high IQ skinhead anti-hero. Yeah, real genius, real think tank over there. Livid City says, I'm Indian and Protestant. Is it okay for me to be a groiper? Yeah, as long as you're right on the issues. Princess Amunda says, you see that girl with Tourette's? E-girl maybe one time. I did see that. Pretty based. No, disavow. And no E-girls. No E-girls, never. Not going to say it. I will just simply say, look, I will just simply reiterate, no E-girls, not even once. Not even one time. Not even one time. Never. Do you know what never means? Do you know what not even once means? It means not even once. Never. Zero. Zero times. No e-girls. I don't know how many times, and I know you're kidding. I know you're kidding, but I still get this. I still get it. The clapping is kind of like a white girl thing. But I still get that. That's better. That's more ethnic. People DMing me. I still hear stories about this. People learning the hard way. No e-girls. I fucking hate them so much. Like, just today, I was looking at some content. Some of this content that I see on the timeline, not even from, like, big famous e-girls, but just, like, smaller e-girl accounts, like Wignat-type e-girl accounts, and I look at their content, and it's so bad. That's all they do is just shit out bad content. They have to go. We just can't have them on the internet. Stop enabling them. That's why I've maintained simps are worse than e-girls. And we all know that. So anyway, Yeah, if you needed another, if you needed a refresher on that, there you go. Some of the content they post, it's like, I want to go Joker mode, okay? I want to go Joker on them. Because I don't think I've ever seen an e-girl make good content. There's like, well, okay. I wouldn't say that, like, Michelle Malkin's an e-girl, right? Because Michelle Malkin was like a legacy person before she was on the internet. And same with Ann Coulter and Faith Goldie to some extent. I would say there's like, okay. So there's some people that make good content. It's still no e-girls. But the vast, vast majority of e-girls, they are incapable of making good content. I know it sounds like I'm being hypocritical. I'm saying no e-girls. I'm saying in some cases they make okay content. That's all I'm saying. And in those cases, they're like, you know, no offense, but Malkin and Ann Coulter are from a different generation. So technologically, it's different. I mean, are they really e-girls if they were writing books for 20 years and then they have a Twitter? Like, I don't know if that's the same thing. You know what I mean? In any case, I'm still saying no e-girls. But just in those cases, they make good content, right? But I think it's almost 100% of e-girls are incapable of making good content. They just can't do it. Just can't produce it. Let's see. Midwestern Gentleman says, hey, Nick, Gen Xer here, and I legitimately didn't know MTV was still a thing. A lion doesn't care if gnats are nipping on their butt, and you shouldn't either. Keep smiling, King, because you're winning. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but by the same token, a major cable network does a hit piece on you, and then they drop an ADL reference at the end. Like, I do have to be worried about that, but I appreciate the sentiment. Base Leaf says, do you think the MTV smear job could be grounds to sue for defamation? Maybe worth looking into. Love you, big guy. You were blessed with a sword for a mouth. Hail Jesus Christ, King of Kings. Yeah, retweet on that last part. I don't know. I'd have to consult with a lawyer. The problem is you sign a release. So you sign an appearance release for this, and like they cover all their grounds legally. So I don't know. I mean, it's worth looking into, but thanks for the advice. Look into suing for defamation. Oh, really? Wow. I've never heard of defamation before. But yeah, I'll check it out. Princess, and it says, I didn't say it like that. It says Princess. It says, I'm Jewish and I think Trump has done too much for Israel. So here's your K-word pass, King. You deserve it. Sincerely, an Ashkenazi Jew. Well, yeah, I'm going to disavow that. I don't need a K-word pass because I would never use it. I love the Jewish people, okay? Let's see. Pounds Aesthetics says the MTV special was really inspiring. Felt good to see an Afro-Latino defend himself against a white supremacist. Yeah, a real underdog tale. Nuclear University says, what do you think of Nuclear University? I'm not really familiar with that. Is that... Oh, KAA, that's K. Is that K. Alexander? I haven't seen a lot of their content, but I think I saw their video on USS Liberty. Pretty good stuff. Michael the Archangel says, the onslaught is real, but remember, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. For righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We will prevail. Yes, very true. L. Ron says, when I worked in retail, I would make it a conscious effort to ask a parent with their half-caste child if they was watching the kid for someone else. That's kind of funny, I guess. Justin says, as we metaphorically make the neocon, okay, something, something, the catboy storms forward and stomps, letting out a vicious nya. Okay, thanks for that. Elevated Squirrel says, saw Owen Benjamin's response to the MTV gig. He thinks you've been bought and paid for. Made fun of your mom's email to MTV. What's this guy's issue? I don't know. He's just got a problem. But not really worth talking about. Jordan Gray says, who would have thought that one epic gamer could take on Conservative Inc., right-wing media, and left-wing media and come out victorious every time? Trust the plan. That's all I can say at this point is trust the plan. I'm taking on the whole world right now. The onslaught that I've been getting from MTV, from, like you said, the left-wing media, the right-wing media, it's Right Wing Watch, it's Daily Wire, it's Turning Point USA, it's the ZOA, it's, okay, across the board, the ADL, the SPLC, Washington Post, Time, you know, all these major publications, all these major institutions. And we come out on top. Trust the plan. Andrew says, what was the sweatshirt from last night's DLive video? That is a, what is it, Declining World sweatshirt? My friend is selling those. His name is Savant on Twitter, S-A-E-V-A-N-T. R.A. says, Michelle Malkin's interview of Vince was such a genuine and wholesome schmood, by the way. Our side has the best, realist, most honest vibe. Nothing like those fake mainstream vampire skinwalker shill demons. Yeah, totally true. Well, yeah, everybody on our side is, they're great people. Vince is great. Michelle Malkin's great. They're not just good on the issues, they're great people. They're warm, they're friendly, they're godly. Everyone knows that at this point. That's why people come to our content and they stay for the community. You know, they show up for the political takes and they stay for the community. Sun Game says, blah, blah, blah. Inner City Democrats as Wignats be like, do you think we should disrupt Trump rallies with projectors showing USS Liberty? Also, what do you think of Tulsi? Gets banned. WTF, Nick is a Fed? Okay, yeah. Ethan says, advice for an epic Zoomer starting a YouTube channel? Yeah, don't. Honestly, just don't. You just shouldn't do it. I really don't think it's lucrative anymore for anybody. I mean, really for anybody. And I just went over that in a big way. Especially if you're political, it's just not worth it. It's not lucrative. And, you know, if you do anything else, I'd be pressed to even find out how to be lucrative there. So, you know, being a YouTuber is now like the modern day becoming a singer, you know, or becoming a movie star. Everybody thinks they've got a shot. Everybody thinks they could do it. And, you know, only a very, 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 very tiny percentage of people have what it takes, have the dedication, you know, the talent. And also, and in a lot of cases, it is just catching lightning in a bottle. It's not to say that you can't create your own luck, but there is an element of, you know, some things just have to pop off in exactly the right way. You know, with the platform being so huge, it's so saturated, I really do feel like it's this, it's almost even worse. Because it's like, when people wanted to be a singer back in the day, it's like, if you were talented or something, I don't know, I mean, you could kind of work your way up, and maybe you could sing in clubs or something and whatever, but I feel like with YouTube, it's like there's so much saturation. It's like everybody, you know, in some capacity is making content, whether it's on Twitter or on YouTube, whatever. At least I feel like for young people, this is the case. And so how do you stand up against literally everybody? It's pretty tough, I would say. And then to monetize it is another story. Jaden says, should tobacco be banned too? Probably not. Steve says, my first super chat, so I'll pitch in an extra few dollars. Get yourself some of that delicious and superior McDonald's Coca-Cola for me. Well, thanks. Yeah, I'll do that. Squidward says, on the way to the sleepover, Dark Knight Joker hanging out of the police car, mom taking me home the next day, Joker on the city bus. That is very funny. Is this a meme? Does somebody have this on Twitter? Somebody should at me with that. I don't know if that's based on a real meme or if that is real meme, but that's pretty funny. On the way to the sleepover, Dark Knight Joker hanging out of the police car, mom taking me home the next day, Joker on the city bus. That is very funny. Chad says, what headphones do you use Christmas shopping right now? I use AirPods, but for this show I use, what is it, Turtle Beach, does it say the model on here? I wouldn't recommend them. The only reason I use these headphones is because they have, what is it, when you can hear yourself in the mic? I forget what it's a specific feature where you can hear yourself inside the mic and there's not like a delay. And there's not many headphones that even have that feature. And if they do, it's like there's one brand where you have to download a ton of software. There's other brands where there's other, like, you know, complications. And so this is like the only headphone I could find that has that feature that isn't like, and it's shit. This headset is shit. And it's like the best one I could find. It's wired, but you have to charge it. I broke it on accident, but I guess that was my fault. They're not that comfortable. So I would not recommend. But if you want that, whatever that feature is called, these are the ones that I have. What is it called? Feedback? No, I don't think that's what it's called. It's called, mic monitoring. That's what it is. Yeah, it's mic monitoring. Yeah, so this is the only, and I like that. Some people, because I got another headset like a year ago, and I was like, okay, plugging them in, derp. And then I realized you can't hear yourself. And then I tried to turn on mic monitoring, and there was like a delay. It didn't sound right, you know. So I guess that they don't do that. A lot of people don't do that. I don't know how you could use headphones and not hear yourself like that, especially if they're like noise canceling in any capacity. So anyway, Christopher says, so Nick, you love Jews? Name every single one. Okay, I will, but later. Brahim says, is the national anthem cucked or not? What a dumb question. Oatmeal says, always remember that Joshua asked God to make the sun stand still, not the earth. Take the flat, stationary, enclosed earth pill. NASA lies. The Bible doesn't. Take care, King, and God bless. Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to take the flat earth leap just yet. I don't know if I'm there, but sure. Nolan says, hey, big guy, first time super chatting. Was going to say no cringe, just take my leaf bucks, but realized that would be a self-defeating sentence. Anyway, God bless, King. Well, glad you explained it. That was much less self-defeating. Well, thanks, big guy. Appreciate the big super chat. Excuse me. T. Torchon says, JF says, new rules are tailor-made to ban you. You may want to delete any video where you say faggot. Will you go to DLive? King means you must conquest. I don't know. I don't think the Google made YouTube's rules tailor-made to, I don't think they made them to ban me, but I do think, yeah, a lot of it does fall under there. But yeah, I'm working on it. Don't worry. I'm not gonna, why people want my game plan. I'm not going to give you my game plan. Joe Schmo says, someone tells Charlie Kirk to debate Nick the Knife. Charlie replies, there is no F in way. Ha. That's great. Big Salami says, banning porn would be curing a symptom. So what is the underlying issue that makes people fall prey to porn in the first place? Love you, big guy. Man's fallen nature, and you're not going to fix that. So you have to ban porn. R.A. says, watching Joker for the 13th and final time tonight. Practically have the whole thing memorized. Every line, scene, movement. Never forget Joker month. Me too, dude. You got me beat. I've only seen it 7 times, but yeah, I feel similarly whenever I watch it. I'm even like doing the lines in the seat, especially the last scene. You know, the last scene when he's on the Murray show. But yeah, I mean, it's almost like when you listen to an album a number of times, and when one song ends, you can sort of anticipate the next song. You can hear it before it starts. That's what it's like to me watching Joker. Every sound, every part, you know, every little part of it. Yeah, I feel the same way. Can relate. I will never forget Joker week. One of the best, or Joker month, rather. Best month of my life. Yeezy Season says, hey, King, didn't have anything interesting to say, so I just thought I'd give you some cash. Take care and God bless. Well, thanks. Clear Shadow says, shout out to On F the Right on iFunny. Okay. Anon says, skinhead saying, someone needs to take action was literally a thinly veiled threat of violence. Yeah, that's what I heard. Crank Faster says, in your opinion, what is the best time to wear a striped sweater? Oh, ha ha ha, funny. He could have done this in a much better way. Rob says, hey, Nick, I just ordered a mac and cheese burger on a pretzel bun. This is my first time trying a burger of this configuration. I have high hopes for its quality, but I could easily see myself being disappointed. Thoughts? You're cringe. Those are my thoughts. Oh, ha, ha, ha. You really added on. That's hilarious. If we were in a group right now, if we were in a group and we were in a circle and we were all making jokes, I was like, made a burger and Swiss joke and everyone laughed and someone else added on, and then you added this, nobody would laugh. It would just be uncomfortable. You would say, I wonder about this configuration. Thoughts on this burger? And everyone, people would give you this. They'd like look away and look down and like, so anyway. Because I don't know what you were even going for with that one. I don't even know what you were trying for with that. Pretzel bun, mac and cheese. I don't go in for these specialty burgers like this. I go in for the basics, okay? Meat, lettuce, onion, cheese, you know, a special sauce, or a mustard and ketchup type thing. But whenever people try to do all this goofy shit, it's an artisan, you know, ciabatta bread, or it's a pretzel bun, or we have this, you know, I don't know. I don't like all that, okay? I went to a burger place in New York City when I was there for the Milo show this weekend. And I went to this place called Whitman's. I don't know if people in New York know that place. I guess it's like they have a couple of locations. It's like a chain or a franchise. And I went there, and I'm looking at their menu, and I see like they have this burger. And this is like one of their main burgers. And it says, oh, it's like this burger, it's got blah, 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 and it's infused with this, like, ooh, this, like, weird kind of cheese. And I'm like, hey, yeah, I just got a question. What kind of cheese is this? It was, like, some specialty cheese I never heard of. It's like, oh, it's cheddar. I'm like, why doesn't it just say cheddar? I was going to order something else because I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like that. You know, what kind of cheese is it? It's like blah, blah, blah kind of cheese. I'm like, oh, what is that? Oh, it's cheddar. Why doesn't it just say that? Well, then I order the burger. It takes, like, a half hour to come out. And I take one bite into it. The gimmick with this burger is that it was stuffed with cheese. It didn't have cheese on top. It was stuffed. It was like infused with cheese. I take one bite and all the cheese spills out of the plate. Literally all the cheese. Great fucking idea, right? Sorry for the language, but I'm just like, somebody must have cooked up this menu, no pun intended. And they were like, oh, I know what we could do. We could infuse a burger. Why not put a slice of cheddar cheese? We could infuse it with this specialty kind of cheddar cheese. Well, to me, if you just put a slice of cheese on the burger, I'd have a cheeseburger. Now I have a plate full of liquid cheese and a burger with no cheese on it. So, really great idea. Wow, you really changed the game with that one. Congratulations, really genius. Just keep it simple. You've been doing the cheeseburger for 100 years or something like that. You don't need to mess up a good thing, okay? Well, what if we did, and that's not directed entirely at you, but you're like, you know, mac and cheese on a burger. Mac and cheese belongs on a plate next to a burger. Give me a patty, give me lettuce, give me, you know, whatever fixings you want, as long as it's manageable. I always say when they stack it real big or they make it really messy, who wants that? Who does this appeal to? I see there was this one thing I saw on Twitter. It was one of those channels where they show you like outrageous food concoctions. And it was a burger that they literally pour cheese on top of it. They pour liquid cheese all over the burger. And you eat this thing with your hands. Why is that appealing? I'm going to literally grab a wet burger covered in liquid cheese and attempt to eat. And it's already stacked like this high. Well, how is that an enjoyable dining experience that you're just going to have like 100 napkins wiping between your fingers and, you know, wiping your mouth and, you know, making sure. I don't know. Am I autistic? Is that just me or is that not normal? Because to me, I don't see the appeal of that when they're like, it's a burger, but it's like 3 feet tall and you look like a retard eating it. You know, it's a burger, but it's wet, but it's soaking wet. And you're going to get messy when you eat this. Well, I don't want to get messy. I came here to eat a burger, not to wipe my hands for 20 minutes. All right. Well, that got a little bit needlessly heated. Maybe that was a little excessive, but you get the picture. I just so ridiculous to me. I don't know. I feel like I'm going crazy sometimes when it comes to things like that. Those are my thoughts. Trent Manslow says, as I said on Twitter, anyone attacking you or your mom over this is showing us just how gross they are. Imagine attacking someone for having a good mother. Extend some wholesomeness from the Groypers to Mama Fuentes. Well, thanks. Yeah, it's totally true. You know, it's a family. It's a family. It's a wholesome family moment. You know, mom looking out for a kid because we were lied to, you know, because we were just totally preyed upon by a cable network. And people's reaction is like, oh, LOL, like, oh, you have a mom that cares about you. Oh, yeah, that's a total own, dude. George Mountain says, since they recorded Sean's B-reel looking at your Twitter account before they even visited your house, do you think they intended the entire time to screw you over or did they just slap it together? I think actually they recorded the B-roll maybe after. I don't remember the whole timeline with him. I wasn't privy to the shooting timeline with him, so I don't know when they recorded that. I only know when they recorded me. So I have no idea. But it's definitely possible. It's definitely possible they plan to screw me over the whole time. Jax says, yeah, I drive a massive truck, turn my brights on, and ride your bumper on the freeway. That makes me a man. I honestly, and I shouldn't be like this, but I get serious road rage on the highway when people do stuff like that. Pisses me off, but yeah, I see a lot of that. Fortunately, not so much in Chicago, but whenever I go to like Indiana or I go to Iowa or went to Michigan recently, you see some more trucks. You see some more of that kind of behavior. Groyper Wave with a big super chat. Wow, thank you so much. He says, have a Merry Christmas season and trust the plan. Yeah, Merry Christmas to you too. The two messages of the season, Merry Christmas and trust the plan. Well, thanks so much. Let's see. True Seeking Missile says, the D live stream last night was hilarious. You have handled these media hit jobs with style, class, and humor. God bless you, King. Well, thanks. Alan says, that Shane Johnson looks like the biggest meth head. His pupils were so dilated. I know I saw that at the end. That did not look normal. Might be why he couldn't make eye contact. He was strung out, you know. I'm sure they paid him in crystal, right? You know, I'm sure right after the interview ended, he went back to like scratching his skin, you know, picking it open. There's bugs under my skin. You're saying the same thing as the KKK and the same thing that the voices are telling me. Can you get this bug under my skin, right? He's all wounded from being on meth. Yeah, that would seem legitimate to me. Tom says, wore my MAGA hat around Chicago today, inspired by your epic MTV appearance last night. Keep laughing in the faces of mad women and womanly men, King. I will do that. I will continue to laugh. I'm just having a good time. I'm just funny, man. I'm just schmooting, bro. I'm vibing. Anti-Root says, they didn't show his face because someone would make a Dash Right meme, which I disavow because that is probably violating the TOS, and I like being on YouTube, yeah. Jewel says, keep it up, King. God bless. Thanks. Kevin says, you're using the term assault rifle unironically. Cringe. Okay. Here we go with the gun people. Honestly, look, you know me. I'm pro Second Amendment. I'm anti every form of gun control, but you still get these retards like, it's a magazine. It's a magazine. You know what? Assault rifle's not a real term. Oh, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Really, apologies for the language, but these people with the gun fixation, you call it a clip, God forbid. You call it an assault rifle, God forbid, right? Jeez, they got an assault rifle stuck up their ass. Yeah, use the term assault rifle unironically. Cringe, that's got to play Call of Duty. Reptilian Elite's a suspect, is 6'1", last seen wearing baggy pants, no belt, oversized white tank top, Jordans, do-rag. Seen driving a purple Lincoln with gold rims. Police unable to identify race at the time. Yeah, they couldn't even guess. Can't even profile, right? Justin says, Nick, I'm not a longtime follower, but I'm glad I found you. Just curious, have you seen a certain documentary? If so, share your thoughts. Thank you. No, I've never seen that before. Jay says, Nicholas J. Kaczynski blocked by Anomaly for naming? No, Anomaly's based. Anon says, black Hebrews are literally the biggest schizos in the world. They unironically believe blacks ruled the ancient world before aliens gave it to the whites. Yeah, I told you, they're insane. So, John Doe says, Vox Day wants a debate. Well, I want a cheeseburger right now, but, sometimes we can't always have what we want. If Vox Day can get a serious audience, I'd be happy to debate him, but as far as I'm concerned, he's basically irrelevant and also a bad faith actor. So, Reptilian Elite says, Justin Light, hey, Nick, recently assigned your case. I mean, hey, Nick, new viewer. Do you watch Nazi stuff? Do you like it? Yeah, right. You love to see it. Steve says, love the Chopped and Screwed interview on MTV. Can't wait for the mixtape. Yeah. Chopped and Screwed, a Jewish remix of my footage, right? Julius Caesar says, when will the Jewish on Jewish violence stop? I think Lil Dicky should do an anti-gang violence LP so that maybe young wayward Jews can hear a more positive message in their music. I agree. Yeah, their music has gotten out of control. The Beastie Boys are responsible for this. Benjamin's has been watching your show for a while now, starting to think these politics are a crooked game. Yeah, I'm starting to think it's the fix is in here. Arseny says, thoughts on Abigail Shapiro's nudes? I don't know. I have not seen them. Clayman says, Mom, I want to see the Joker. Mom, we have the Joker at home. Joker at home. Onision speaks, meltdown. I don't know who that... I've heard a lot about this guy, but I don't know anything about him. M says, when you are president, who will be your vice president? I don't think I'll ever be the president. Who knows? But, I don't think they'll ever allow somebody like me to get anywhere near politics. But who would be my vice president? Maybe would be... who would be the number two guy? That's a tough one. I'd have to think about that. Maybe, I don't know. It's a good question. We'd have to see what the situation is like, but I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. The day that I become president is like, the day Catboys are going to become real. So, Max says, we can't even beat people who wear sandals and don't aim. Tax dollars a good use, I see. That's kind of a boomer joke, but true. Nada says, Christian Prince, the true Arabian prophet. Don't know what that means. Let's see. Yoltz Terran says, here's my reparation money for being cringe. Great show, big guy. By the way, please drop everything right now to handle my stupid merch issues. Okay, thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. Rob says, hey again, just ate my burger. So here's an update. My number one concern was structural integrity, but that was sufficient. However, that specific combo of flavors was average. Not bad, but wouldn't buy again. Okay, not funny. Didn't laugh. Video Game Snakes is not sure if you saw the Memories silly hit piece of the Groypers. Fun fact, Memory was founded by Yigal Karman, a former Mossad agent. Ah, yeah. So it's not based after all, turns out. Free Mats says, I'm deploying to Iraq in October. Pretty cringe, bro. Yeah, that is kind of cringe. I don't know. I don't know why people sign up for this at that point, right? Mentality says, why is our military sounding more and more like the NCR? Okay. Groiper says, what's the word on a CPAC Groiper meetup? God bless. I'll let you know. God Emperor Oni-chan says, Virgin, are you really going to run the trucks 24-7 for 20 years? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Why legit what the F versus the Chad? Yes. What a timeline. Good luck, King. Stay true. Thanks. Yeah, pretty funny. Are we really going to run everything for 24 hours? Yes, we are. Kind of based. Based Leaf says, saw Zeducation's video today about how the poppy fields in Afghanistan flourished, as well as the opium crisis in America in the last 20 years. Really makes you think, huh? Oh, yeah, really makes you think. KS says, I love the troops. Me too, man. Thank the troops for their service. We love them. Of course, we're criticizing Afghanistan and not the veterans. Sheets with a big super chat. Thank you so much. Says, Blue Check's predictably silent on this, but Trump's recent EO is likely unconstitutional on its face. Redefining a clear term here to shoehorn statutory or constitutional protected class status will be DOA in any federal court. But will rules apply here? Doubt. Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't see how that would stand up. But like you said, the judiciary is politicized just like every other branch of government. So I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for it to get struck down. But thanks so much for the big super chat. Jordy says, hey, new watcher, any advice for a young lad in a relationship with a semi-based girl? Or how to stay strong in a relationship? Anything helps. Not really the guy to ask. You know, frankly, I'm not really the right person for relationship advice. I don't know how, why semi-based plays into it. I don't know. Just be nice to her. I don't know. Actually, don't be nice. You know, as far as I'm concerned, look, I mean, like, be nice to your girlfriend. Don't get me wrong. But don't simp. You can still simp in a relationship. I see this all the time. People get in a relationship, or even if they're not in a relationship, and they think that what women want is somebody who's like all over them, flowery, just nice and everything. And it's like, you know, you don't want to be mean to them, but you also want to remember that, you know, I think the edge is critical. That's what people have lost. That's my observation from the outside looking in. Ellie Bell says, the average American... Oh, I'm not reading anti-American propaganda. Yeah, thanks for the money. Thanks for the money, Europoor. Julius Caesar says, journalists are space aliens that glow in the dark. You can see them when you're driving. Okay, I can't read the rest of that, but I think you know what comes next. Spades Guy says, poopy rapey. Okay, thanks. Yeet Skeeterson says, based off that email, Nick definitely gets his go-off king energy from his mother's side. God bless you and your family. Stay safe, brother. I would say it's a little bit of a mix. I would say the maybe verbal IQ go off is from the mom's side. I would say the hole in the wall go off is probably from the dad's side. You know, I don't know. That's not a dig. That's not a dig at anybody, but I would say that definitely it is a very Italian trait, the sort of go off and gesticulating and all that. And I would say probably the temper. I would say probably the temper, the rage, you know, maybe the loss of impulse control once you pass a certain threshold. I would say that go-off juice probably comes from the other side. But yeah, apropos. Nikolai says, currently a soldier and no one in the military is surprised by the papers. Maneuvers are random. We end up retaking land we took years ago. Yeah, and everybody's known this for years. Emma says, you have officially turned my father full Groiper. Wow, based. Well, congratulations. Very good to see. Anon says, oh, you're a knicker? Okay, I can't read that. If you're talking about terrorism, I just can't read that. Pack Wave says, Nick, what is your fax number? Okay. Rub says, Nick, what is it like being the world's most handsome genius? It's not as easy as I make it look. I can tell you that much. James Russell says, if you think the stupidity in Afghanistan is bad, you're going to love what will happen if Iran happens. Yeah. Chaim Silvershekel says, I crave more MTV Wignat Mongoloid debates, King. Surveyor called me today. I was a Black Dem climate denier. How many others like me are they polling? That's pretty funny. I don't think we're going to engage anymore with Wignats. That was from like 2 years ago, but it was fun while it lasted, right? Katamari says, Fed Super Chats be like, what's your daily schedule like? Do you follow a schedule? Haha. Where do you go daily and when and why? Right? All these Super Chats are like, hey, new viewer here. Are you a Nazi? Hey, new viewer here. What's your daily schedule like? What do you do every day? Where do you keep your firearms? What kind of firearms do you have? And where do you keep them? What times of the day are you not home? Oh, yeah, just a friendly Super Chat, right? RJ says, what do you think about Teddy Roosevelt? Think he's based? Bob says, looking slim, pimp. Thanks. Thanks. Yeet says, I want to see American arts and crafts first. Yeah, that's what's going to have to be. Hey, everybody, you're watching. Hello, everybody, you're watching Crafts First. Today, we're making a gingerbread house. This gingerbread house. No, no, don't go there. No, please, don't do it. I was going to say, you know, the gingerbread house has a smokestack. This gingerbread house has a really tall smokestack. Unlike, no, kidding, it's a joke, it's a joke. I'm kidding, I'm only kidding. Well, I just can't help myself. I can't help myself but to get in trouble like that. Welcome to Crafts First. Today we've got a gingerbread house and, there's something weird about this gingerbread house. I don't know if there's enough snow caps outside. I don't know if the snow cap field is deep enough. I've said too much already. It's enough. Stop before you get yourself in trouble. No. Graham cracker doors! Graham cracker doors! No, I'm kidding. It's a joke. I'm only kidding. We're having, you can tell we're having fun. You can tell I'm laughing. You can tell it's not serious. You can tell I believe in the 6 million gumdrops, the 6 million gingerbread men. I'm just done. I gotta quit. I just can't help myself with this stuff. I just can't help myself. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I say that because it's funny. But let's see. I wonder if that's going to make it. And maybe Ben Shapiro is going to, he's going to have to do the very belligerent laughing too. He's going to have to. At his next college speech, he's going to say, one of these alt-right leaders said, 6 million gumdrops, graham cracker doors. It's not even, look, it's really not even that funny. The only reason, the whole, Holocaust jokes are kind of stale at this point. But the reason it's funny is because they get so mad about it. That's what makes it funny. What makes it funny is, it was such like, at a certain point, the cookie thing, I even said, is like not funny and stale and lame at this point. But when you have Ben Shapiro reading it out, it just makes it funny again, you know? Anyway, Name says, Coomers be like, but I want to simp for massive porn conglomerates, though. Lowborgs be like, but they are private companies, though. Compulsive degenerates, yeah, true. Aiden says, can't wait for your 10-minute rewind stream. Seems a little short, though. 10-minute, what are you talking about? Max says, when's the Macy's suit haul coming? It's not going to happen. I haven't bought a new suit since high school, okay? I haven't bought a new shirt since high school. I bought one new shirt recently because my other one literally broke because a button came off on top. ASDF says, you can't say anything anymore. Boomers vindicated? Nah, just kidding. Also, trust the plan. Nick, you're truly a soldier of Christ. Well, thanks. Very true. Respect my service. DMK says, you're red-pilled on most things. Here we go. Except on the crisis inside the Catholic Church. The Novus Ordo Mass is illicit, irreverent, and needs to go. The true Mass of the Roman Rite is a Tridentine Mass. Okay, bro, whatever. Anon says, okay, but just a teensy little bit of e-girls once? No. No, not even once. Ravenous Lamppost says, there's no way the skinhead you talk to is even part of a hate movement. I'm wondering just how many Wignats are actually feds. Yeah, probably most of them. Name says, MTV unironically documented a Fed trying to recruit a 19-year-old conservative for the KKK. Wonder what the M in MTV really stands for. Not based, yeah. Toxic White Male says, it's okay to be white. Wow, fresh. Ludwig says, love from Denmark. Stay based and red-pilled. Thanks. Primal Ghost says, you blocked me on Twitter, but I guess I shouldn't have been counter-signaling you. Still supports you. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks. Yeah, that's exactly right. Finally, a fair take. Well, you blogged me on Twitter, but it's fair because I was counter-signaling. Still watch your show. Yeah, as it should be. Everything is in order here. ASDFs, as you see JLP say he wouldn't date a girl from the internet. Very based in e-girl pill. He also said he likes you, and he and Anomaly were positive about Groypers. Yeah, I saw him with Anomaly. I honestly love JLP. I think he's one of the best. And I'm very pleasantly surprised that he said that about e-girls. I knew he was our guy. I didn't know he was that much of our guy, right? But he's totally right. Everybody who is wise can see the problem with girls on the internet. HHH says, are you going to debate that porn star? No, she backed out. Angry Mechanics says, how could you get Shapiro to debate? I can't. Jesse Williams says, can I get a shout out for my grandson, Isaac? Yeah, shout out to Isaac. Grendel says, will you ever do a show with John Mark? I don't watch his content, so I don't really know him. Wendy says, can I get a shout out for my sick grandmother, Judy? Oh, no, no, no. No, you can't get a shout out for your sick grandmother named Mrs. Stroyer. Okay. You can't get a shout out for Mrs. Old Lady Stroyer. First name. We can't even play around with that. You're trying to get me banned. Bobby says, watching Zoomer Nick and thinking WTF happened to my face. Shut up. I just filled in, okay? Anon says, LMAO, burger nutting on your plate, gross. Well, no, don't take it that way. I don't think anybody took it that way. That's kind of gross to say that. Anon says, do your parents watch the show? If so, hi, Ma. Yeah, my parents watch the show. Super Meowskers says, just want to say thank you for what you do and have a Merry Christmas. You are awesome. Thanks. Merry Christmas to you, too. Let's see. Scroll down too far. Brendan says, Kang here. When are you coming to Cleveland, big guy? I don't have any plans to go anytime soon. Maybe during the election. Crank Faster says, what would have been a better way to do my striped sweater reference earlier? I don't know. I'm not going to write the jokes for you, but the way that you did it was just like, it's too easy. If it's like, knock, knock, and then I give you the punchline, like, it's too, do you understand why that doesn't work? What's the best time to wear a striped sweater? All the time. Yeah, stupid. Doesn't work like that. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you how to write the jokes, but that is not going to cut it. Feller says, been a Hoosier for 50 years and never met a person like that bald-headed Fruit Loop. Disavowed. Yeah, Indiana's based. He does not represent the based Hoosiers. RA says, never sent super chats this late. But right when he got done reading my chat about how blessed Joker month was, I almost got hit on the highway 2 minutes from the theater. Whole movie flashed before my eyes. Well, maybe you shouldn't be super chatting and driving, right? But I'm glad you're okay. Glad you didn't get hit. Man, I don't know what's going on with you, big guy. Just drive safe, okay? Zach says they're called Euromores, not Europores. That's kind of funny. Alex says, how long does merch take to ship? It depends. Synth Warriors says, take the Israel trip to Joe the Boomer's house. Yeah, we'll see about that. Let's see. Somebody says, Bob Sakamanis' graham cracker doors. No, you beat me to it. Yeah, I'm a genius. Umbrella says, how many Christmas cookies? Okay, it's enough. Yeah, gingerbread cookies. Cosmic Craft with a big super chat. Thanks so much. Jordan says, it was 5,999,000 gumdrops. FBI, open up. Yeah. Bob says, when are we going to get the lampshades? Okay. Simon Scola says, the frosting is not airtight enough. Okay, enough. You're just trying to get me in trouble now. ASDF says, puts in meme flag. Hello, fellow Groypers. Guess we can't support Nick anymore since he talked to a gay Ziocon. I guess we better disband and give up. I know, I've seen those too. It's so obvious. It's like a Kekistan. Oh, hello, meme flag, right? Well, I guess we got to pack it up. You know, the movement is canceled. Totally not obvious fed, right? Based Leaf says, have you shown your true power level on social media? Why would I say that? Are you a fed? Let's see. Rob says, sheesh, I really did have that burger. It wasn't a repetitive Swiss cheese joke. Next time I'll have a pizza. Next time, just come up with some better content. But thanks for the super chats anyway. It was it provided some entertainment nonetheless. Let's see. We've got one more here. Let's see. George Martin says, what's the best time to wear a Stahlhelm? Okay, never. Well, that's our last super chat. That's going to do it for us tonight on the show. Remember, we are dealing with the new terms of service. We're dealing with new community guidelines. I don't know what the future of the show holds. I don't know if we'll be able to be on YouTube for very much longer. The only way you can follow me after, you know, if anything happens to me on YouTube, knock on wood, hopefully nothing, but the only way you can follow me if something happens to me on YouTube is if you sign up for my email list. Go to NicholasJFuentes.com, put in the email that you check, and like I've been saying the whole week, I don't spam that email list, I don't sell the list. The only thing I'm going to use it for is to tell you where you can find me if the worst happens on YouTube. So be sure to do that, NicholasJFuentes.com. Don't put it off, because you never know what could happen. Could happen tomorrow. Hope it doesn't. Don't want to jinx it, but that's reality. The next best thing is Telegram. Follow me on Telegram, t.me/NickJFuentes1, but definitely do the email list. Remember to subscribe to the channel, give me a big thumbs up, leave a comment down below. Click the notification bell to get notified every time I go live. Remember, we are on the air Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Nicholas J. Fuentes. As always, this is America First. Thanks for watching. Thanks to our super chatters. Thanks to everybody that watches the show. We love you, and I will see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.